This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner. It's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here with Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And Rebecca Ford.
Hi.
It is Emmys nominations eve week. There's a way to say that. The Emmy nominations will be out next week. We'll have a special episode about that. So for now, we're going to do a little bit of final predictions. We've been talking about it for months. But before that, we're going to look at the first half of the year in movies. We kind of teased this last week, looking at the success of Asteroid City. Maybe it's a good time to flag some of the other titles we think we might be talking about headed into the fall, because the year is halfway over, crazily enough. And we also wanted to start by welcoming some new Academy voters, or I guess prospective Academy voters. Rebecca, the rule is that people can be invited to the Academy as I think 298 people were last week, but they don't necessarily have to accept, right?
Yes. I feel like Ryan Coogler is the famous case of someone who was invited but did not accept. But yes, I think 99% of people do accept, and obviously considered a huge honor to join.
We never know if they don't accept unless they tell us, right?
Yes.
So we just live in the mystery. We were looking at the list. I think Taylor Swift was the name that certainly popped out to me. I put it in the headline of the write-up I did on it. But Richard, any other Academy members you want to single out and celebrate and hope they vote correctly?
Well, I mean, I think that the Taylor Swift thing is interesting, because I think I said in this podcast that last year, when she was kind of in the running for two potential nominations, one for the song from Where the Crawdads Sing and one for her short film, she did pop up at some very like Academy specific or like Oscar season specific parties, mm-hmm. you know, sort of having serious conversations with Martin McDonagh and whatnot. And so despite those nominations didn't happen, like the Academy said, no, but we still want you as part of this club. You know, Taylor Swift mm-hmm. is running the biggest world tour in history at the moment. I think she's going to be the first touring artist to make over $1 billion. So that definitely seems like an interesting decision on the Academy's part, especially as Taylor Swift has written and directed her own film. I don't know if it's already wrapped or whatnot, but
oh yeah,
that is coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have, I mean, it's exciting that Kiwi Kwan, you know, now that he's a winner, has been invited.
At this point, if you win and don't get invited, like, we just...
Something's wrong.
We riot. Yeah, something weird happened.
But Austin Butler getting in there was interesting, because, you know, his career, his big film career, is really just getting started. And yes, mm-hmm. he was nominated last year, but I'm surprised that they decided to rush that. Maybe they've seen Dune 2 and it's just that big a performance.
I wondered about Bill Hader and what it was that kind of got him in the Academy this year, because obviously his TV career is pretty stellar. His film career is more limited. He's a famous film nerd. Like, his Criterion Closet video is famous. So maybe it just finally got there. He seems like a very worthy member. But when it's someone who didn't just get nominated or just win, you're like, why now?
Why
what
this
happened?
Year? Yeah. I had the same feeling about Nicholas Hoult. I thought he would have been invited the year of The Favorite, because that was such an Oscar-friendly movie. But he was invited this year, too. So, yeah, it does make me wonder, well, how do you decide this is the year for these people?
Yeah. Paul Reiser also. Like, really? It took this long for you to let Paul Reiser be in the Academy? Do we want to talk about David Zaslav being invited to join the executive branch the same week or the week after he got in TCM, however that shook out? That interesting look.
The executive list is always one of my favorite lists to go through, because you're just like, huh, interesting. I feel like there hasn't been a week that's gone by lately that we haven't, you know, seen his name circulating around in some sort of news. So, you know, he's there now. And I also thought like Bella Bajaria is interesting. I mean, there's quite a few Netflix names. I wonder if we broke it down by studio, which studio has the most execs on the Academy list, because obviously there's some, you know, preference with how they vote, I would assume, for all of them. But
yeah, I mean, there's also names on that list, like Janet Pearson, the head of South by Southwest. Like, why? What took her so long to get it? Like, Everything Everywhere All at Once premieres there and wins Best Picture. So then a year later, you put her on the list.
I think if you look at the actors who were invited, you're seeing actors from RRR, Ram Charan. You have Naomi Merlant, the French actress who was in Tar, Park Hae-il, which... they were in Decision to Leave, the Park Chan-wook film. So yeah, you see a reflection of the more international. Vicky Creeps, finally, at long last.
Oh yeah, your letters, they finally received them, Richard.
Yeah, Dolly De Leon's cool. Yeah, it's an interesting, I just would love to see what that decision process is like. I mean, Raul Castillo, who people will know, very few people will know from Looking. He's been great in a bunch of things. He was in The Inspection last year, Cha-Cha Real Smooth previous to that. He's a pretty like indie actor in a lot of ways. And so I'm just curious like how someone like him got the attention of the Academy the same year that Selma Blair did.
Yeah.
You know, like I would love to a peek into that process. Oh, also Sakira Ando, who was really good in the new Kore-eda film at Cannes.
I feel like we should shout out Brooke Smith, famous for Silence of the Lambs, who tweeted that she had an Academy Award-winning friend submit her as a potential Academy member this year and had not been selected. Good for her for opening up about it. I personally wonder if it was Jodie Foster. Just have to. Let Brooke Smith in the Academy, you guys.
Maybe it was Ted Levine and they were just like, that's too creepy. We can't have Buffalo Bill nominating Catherine Martin to be in the Academy.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Okay, sticking with the topic of the Oscars, as I said, we want to look at the first half of the year, the Oscar buzz that may linger. I think we may all agree that there's not an Everything Everywhere All at Once that will have opened in the first half of the year and win Best Picture, but we wouldn't have said that this time last year, so who knows? I do think any conversation about this has to start with Past Lives, which is A24's spring hit this year. To me, and I still haven't seen it yet, but to me that seems like if you're going to pick one movie from the first half of the year that's going to get a Best Picture nomination, that has to be it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would hope so. It's done pretty well in its slow expansion at the box office. Obviously, most of the reviews are good. If people are interested in a dissenting opinion on that movie, Allison Wilmore at New York Magazine wrote a really interesting negative review of that movie that made me think. It didn't deter me from liking the movie as much as I do. But it's not all love all the time for Past Lives, but it's mostly been that. And not only is it great filmmaking, great writing, but it's 2/3, actually, central performances are really great. So I would hope that they can last the long journey from Sundance to the Oscars almost a year later. Well, the nominations will be about exactly a year from when it premiered.
Yeah, that's always the case with the Sundance titles.
Yeah, I think they're running a really smart campaign. I mean, they, you know, A24 knows how to do that marathon, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. And I think it, for me, it's definitely the one that stands out the most. And I think has a really strong chance of being in the conversation for the whole long year.
But the campaign they have to run is different. Like Everything Ever All at Once is a distinctive movie. But I think A24 has done well kind of tailoring what they do to the actual titles themselves. And I'll be very interested to see like what the push is for Past Lives in a different way than it was for their last Best Picture winner.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the same film as Moonlight in any way, but it's a smaller, quieter movie like that. So, you know, that was their first win. But, you know, I think they really know how to carefully release these movies.
Do we think Celine Song is ready for this push? I mean, you talked to her, Rebecca, and like Barry Jenkins, I think, was so like game for the long, long push for Moonlight and was such a key element of that. And the Daniels, to some extent, were too. Like, they got to have a personality to drive these things, right?
Yeah, I feel like having a charismatic director is really key if your movie's doing a little bit more of an uphill battle.
Charismatic and tireless, just willing to travel.
Yeah, I did it. I moderated a Q&A with her and the cast, and she's a delight to be around. She's very, very smart, but also very warm and seemed just really excited that people, you know, love the movie. I mean, she was a playwright. This is her first film. So I think she's just sort of embracing the whole thing. And I was like, okay, just pace yourself. But she seemed totally game to do it. So I think she'll be willing.
Yeah, coming from the theater world, I mean, those people have to really hustle hard for anything.
That's true.
So hopefully that is an advantage. I mean, Barry Jenkins, you know, Moonlight was not his first film, and he also was a Telluride guy. You know, he'd volunteered there. He was part of their family, you know, as they spoke about it when Moonlight premiered and subsequently. And so he did have a bit of industry, I don't know, connection, I guess. Behind him that Celine Song has. I mean, also, these movies are not very similar, except for they're the same distributor. But
you know that they're going to, like, when Oscar ballots start assembling, we start being like, what's going to make up a 10? Like, they occupy a similar spot on a list like that.
I mean, I would hope that Past Lives, its gentleness does not mean that it will be overlooked. I mean, these, you know, the Academy is trying to diversify what kind of movies they nominate for their biggest awards with some success. But I still think if you look at movies that have had, you know, done well in recent years, it's big, loud stuff, you know, of varying sort. I mean, Everything Everywhere is different from Three Billboards or whatever. But, you know, they're more aggressive, I guess. And Past Lives is really the opposite of that. So hopefully there is room for a movie like that as it contends with, you know, Blitz and a Scorsese movie and Maestro and whatever else we have coming our way this fall.
Yeah. Okay, if we're picking a second place spot, is it Asteroid City? Is there anything else that could realistically fit into a Best Picture 10?
I mean, Asteroid City, given how well, how good its reviews were and how well it's done at the box office, relatively speaking. Yeah, I think that maybe for the first time in 10 years, Budapest Hotel was the last time that an Anderson movie really registered it with the Oscars, and actually the only time that he'd really been nominated for Best Director. Yeah, maybe he's due. I'm overblowing it, but like, is Air at all something that we should keep an eye on?
I was going to ask the same question. I don't know. It just went so deadly silent after it was its release that it's hard to tell. I think the fall is going to be so packed that is really going to just push it further down the list. But, you know, in the weeks leading up to its release, there was a ton of buzz around it. So maybe it could have a comeback.
Yeah, that kind of thing can bounce back, especially like, I don't know where we are in the Ben and Matt cycle of backlash versus pre-backlash. I mean, they've been through so many of them that like maybe they're immune to it. But I did think that their story and, you know, the company that they've started to make this movie that, you know, is sharing profits with the people who help make the movie, like there is a compelling story to that. And if you're looking for something that's like mainstream movie that appeals to grown-ups and made some money, it made $52 million at the box office, which is not nothing. There's not going to be a whole lot else in that spot usually, so why not? Do you feel more bullish, Richard, on Air than Asteroid City? Like, if I'm just making you choose.
No, I don't. I mean, I think that Air was just sort of spoken about that, like, as an Oscar, potential Oscar movie around the time of its release. And then, like Rebecca said, it just wasn't that sticky in like, discourse or whatever. People aren't really still talking about that movie. So I think Amazon also has, like, other stuff on the way in the fall that they might prioritize, but I think
they have Saltburn, which the Emerald Fennell movie, which I think we have a lot of reason to really anticipate.
Yeah, they have a movie with Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal. You know, there's stuff, and so maybe their slate is too full. But Air was a big sort of statement from the people who made it about, you know, a new model of compensation in Hollywood as these strikes. Well, some strikes loom. One is ongoing.
I guess by the time this comes out, we still won't know if there's a tax strike.
Right,
just trying to tell how dated will be.
Maybe that sort of behind the scenes, you know, seeming triumph for labor in Hollywood will give it an edge. But no, I think between the two of those, I think Asteroid City is the much surer bet.
My parents went to see Asteroid City in the theaters, and like that's my anecdotal evidence of choice that people care about this movie. And we'll see how that translates in the months to come. So I think we should also just shout out our personal champions that we don't want people to forget about. You know, not something that I want to like objectively predict will have buzz, but that I hope will. And I wanted to start this with a listener email from Andrew, who wanted to throw out Jennifer Lawrence in No Hard Feelings for a Best Actress nomination. He said it came to him in a dream, which I love. And he knows it's an uphill climb. It's a capital C comedy, but look, she's showing a new side of herself. It's making money. Could this happen, or am I just wishful thinking? I would say mostly wishful thinking, but look, I don't see any reason not to keep talking about it.
I think the Globes may be calling her name since they have the comedy category.
Sure. But hey, that could build buzz again. Like, if that Best Actress field winds up being thin, I don't know.
I mean, I'd love a Jennifer Lawrence Oscar season. I think she's just the best. Like,
I just don't know if she would love it.
She was pretty delightful on the No Hard Feelings tour. Like, yeah. I guess it's not as grueling as an Oscar campaign, but it has felt really good to have her back. And I'm guessing we're not the only ones who might feel that way.
I mean, it's fun to think about that. It's also fun to think about Patti LuPone getting nominated for Beau is Afraid. I think that movie needed to be a bit bigger than it was for that to really happen. But like Past Lives and Celine Song, like Patti LuPone, she's not out of it because there's still critic stuff to come, you know, New York Film Critics Circle and other groups.
Sounds like I know where your vote's going.
Well, who knows? I mean, but actually, you know, in the supporting actress race already, I would give LuPone some competition in Rachel McAdams and Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Like, she's so good in that.
I was going to say that. I will do whatever it takes to just keep talking about her, devote a weekly segment to it, because that performance was so incredible. That movie made some money, but I just really don't want her to be forgotten, because it's hard for me to imagine at least a warmer performance that's going to come out this year. Rebecca, do you have any personal favorites you don't want people to forget?
Well, not favorites, but I'm curious about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, just because I know the first film was kind of in debate for Best Picture. I won the animated Oscar that year. I feel like people were talking about that again with this film, so I'm curious about that. And then I was just looking back at releases, and I totally forgot that Creed 3 came out this year. But I remember seeing that and be like, wow, you know, these are both very underdog picks here, but, you know, Michael B. Jordan can direct, and I think this is a very enjoyable sports movie, and maybe, you know, years ago, this would have been more in contention. Obviously, it's got some more complicated aspects to it now. But they're both kind of movies that I'm like curious to watch to see how big they do push to try to remain a part of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, on the animated track, I mean, I know we're mostly talking about Best Picture stuff, but like the Super Mario Brothers movie is the biggest movie of the year thus far, I'm pretty sure. Enormous. But not that well liked by critics, you know, and maybe people in the industry will sort of sniff it. Like, it looks pretty, but the writing is kind of bad and the voice performances are not great. And I wonder if that is maybe too lowbrow for an animated nomination when there is stuff like Spider-Verse to contend with. Pixar kind of fizzled with Elemental. So that could be an interesting little race there. But I don't know, maybe Spider-Verse can repeat.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the top of my head, because Disney's got wish that, like, not a princess movie, but it's about a wish that Ariana DeBose voices it coming at, like, the holidays. But yeah, I mean, Pixar kind of falling flat on its face again does open that up in a really interesting way.
Also, have we forgotten any international releases that, because you know that's going to be, there's going to be at least one in Best Picture.
Well, that's where I look toward Richard's list of the best movies so far of the year, because he's most likely to keep track.
Yeah, but except a lot of those that came out in, let's say, February, March, April, those were eligible last year.
Oh, right. Yeah, the international qualifying gets really complicated.
The international stuff really, that conversation obviously starts at Cannes. And Berlin sometimes, obviously, before that in February. But Cannes is really the major kickoff. And then when some stuff replays at Toronto and New York Film Festival, you start to see, okay, which films are now sort of slotting into that competition. Other things can emerge, you know, past September or October. But yeah, I think we don't quite know where we are on that front yet. I would assume The Zone of Interest. I would assume the Palme d'Or winner, Anatomy of a Fall. I would hope that Almodovar gets nominated for short for Strange Way of Life.
Yeah. Isn't there another really starry short that we've been talking about that might be up against Almodovar? Or I remember thinking that would make the short series really fun and that he'd have some competition. But I'm sure Taylor Swift will emerge or someone else will emerge to make that race interesting.
Yeah. I would also love to see Julia Louis-Dreyfus get sort of a push, but I think You Hurt My Feelings, but A24 has its hands full. Searchlight has maybe less of its hands full now than it did in January, because I just don't think that Magazine Dreams is going to come out planned. So we'll be curious to see what they kind of pivot to, if they actually have anything to pivot to.
Well, they've got Next Goal Wins, right? Which we haven't seen, but was announced last week as playing in Toronto, which, you know, is to be expected. You know, Taika Waititi won the audience award with Jojo Rabbit, but that feels like a pretty strong contender, and that TIFF slot suggests that they think it's a pretty strong contender.
Yeah.
Oh, Richard, you mentioned You Hurt My Feelings. I mean, Nicole Holofcener, I believe her only nomination still is for Can You Ever Forgive Me, a movie that, you know, she co-wrote but didn't get to direct in the end. It would be really nice to see her finally get nominated for one of her exceptional screenplays.
Yeah. And there is precedent for that. Sometimes a lone nomination comes in screenplay, you know, and that would be really exciting. It's a great, witty, thoughtful script. And that movie didn't do as well as I'd hoped it would. I do have to question the great wisdom of A24 on that one, where it's like, I just don't understand the release strategy for that movie. It sort of opened wider than it should have, and kind of in a crowded time right before Past Lives. And it just didn't feel like it had a lot of room to breathe. But they know more better about distribution than I do, but I don't know. It feels like maybe that could have done something later in the summer, like in August or even in the fall.
Let's throw out Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, for screenplay also.
Sure. Yeah.
Kelly Freeman Craig adapting that book that kind of felt unadaptable in so many ways, and it's just such a treasure.
Yeah, and she won, you know, I guess it was a tie, but Kelly Freeman Craig did get a prize for Best First Feature at the New York Film Critics Circle for Edge of 17. Mm-hmm. So she's not a stranger to the award circuit, even though I think Edge of 17 didn't get quite as recognized as it should have for being as good as it is. But yeah, that would be exciting. I mean, Margaret, again, didn't do very well at the box office, sadly. I think that was a problem of brand identification. It's a 50-year-old novel. Maybe there was a different way to sell that movie, or maybe this is one of those cases where it should have just been on streaming because people can more casually watch it.
No, put it in theaters and then let people watch it.
It is. I mean, it's going to be on. It's. I think it might already be somewhere.
I think people will discover it over time. I mean, Edge of 17 was a really similar thing where, you know, it kind of came and went, and then as the years have gone on, you just hear more and more people talk about how special it is.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, to wrap things up, you will hear from us next week as the Emmy nominations have just come out. We will be parsing through all of them. We have been talking about the Emmys a lot over the course of the spring, so I don't think we necessarily need to predict category by category. So I kind of wanted to see if we can just make a bold prediction or a hope for prediction or kind of a broader sense of what we think is going to happen beyond just like, I think Kieran Culkin will get a Best Actor nomination in drama because, you know, we've talked about that. So I might start by jumping off of something we talked about last week in the limited series thing that a friend of mine texted me about because he argued that he had never, ever heard of A Small Light. And I was saying I've been seeing it advertised everywhere. And I just want to say, I think it's going to overperform, not just because the FYC ads are everywhere. As David and I have talked about, it's also pretty good. It is a series about Meep Geese, who hid Anne Frank and her family. I just think you're going to see that on the list in various places and say, what is that? And I just want you to know that I told you what it was. And you should all watch it before the Emmys happen. All right. Who else wants to take bragging rights and predict something that you think will be a trend or something surprising?
Oh, Katie, you came up with this question. You had more time to think about it than us. I'm going to do more of like a hope than a prediction. But I would love to see Bad Sisters represented. Mm-hmm. It's going drama, and I think it has a bunch of great performances.
Does it make sense as a drama?
We would have to look at, you know, when you look at the dark comedies that, you know, with Barry and The Bear being comedies, I don't know. Does it make sense? I don't know if it
what
hurts.
What is a comedy?
What is a comedy? They need a new category. So, yeah, I think that is a little surprising. It's a drama, but I think it has such a strong ensemble. I thought it was such an enjoyable watch. I feel like the conversation has fizzled a little around it, you know, so I would love to see it show up there, or Sharon Horgan in acting or writing. Just some representation would be, I think, really great. And then my other hope is for Somebody Somewhere or Bridget Everett, because I thought it was a pretty incredible season, and it didn't get a lot of love for its first. So those are my two wishes. But I don't know. I feel like there's always pleasant surprises on Emmy nominations morning. So I'm optimistic that there will be some choices that make us very happy.
I'm curious about the other two, which, you know, had a pretty lauded season three premiere. People, you know, got good reviews. It's kind of a culty, beloved show that maybe got a little more attention than it had in its previous seasons this year. Great performances from Drew Tarver and Helena York and Molly Shannon. Ken Marino, who was also great on Party Down, that revival. That would be a fun supporting actor nomination for one of those two projects. But now we know that the other two, it was its final season for various reasons, perhaps unrelated or related, I don't know, is that there were some HR complaints about how the show is being run by its two creators. So maybe that has marred the other two's nascent trip to awards town.
All of that came out after Emmy voting ended, I
that's
believe.
That's true. So maybe it will be I don't think it will be. I think that show is a little too small, and I'll say it, too gay to register, but especially when there are so many other shows in comedy competing against it. I have to say I watched a lot of season two of The Bear, and I know that the tone is different than season one, but the comedy thing just still baffles me there.
I mean, I'll say I talked to some representatives who may work with some of that talent, and even they are like, why is this show a comedy? So we're not the only ones confused by that.
Should we go back to, because wasn't it for a while, it's like if you were 30 minutes, you were a comedy, and if you were an hour, you were a drama no matter what? Like, and then Ted Lasso just busts the whole thing by being an hour and a half long in every episode.
That rule is so like old by now and not followed that it feels weird that that's the explanation for, you know, this one show. I don't know. It does feel like these categories continue to need a revamp. But what is the solution to this problem? You know?
Yeah, because you would rather it be less specific than more, because you get more interesting shows when you don't totally know where they're going to land. To bounce back to Bad Sisters for a second, I was looking at the drama actress category, and we've talked about this, about Sarah Snook basically having the field to herself now that she's bumped up in the category. It does feel thin in a way that makes me think that something weird could happen, like Sharon Horgan getting in there. I'm seeing some predictions for Kelly Riley for Yellowstone, who's playing this like long running fan favorite character. The Crown feels so weak to me that like, is Imelda Staunton going to get nominated? I'm not sure. I think there could be some interesting surprises in there.
Yeah, I think Carrie Russell for The Diplomat is an interesting...
I think we're all rooting for her, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of fun, kind of a wild swing for her that works. Yeah, The Crown being in even in these predictions is like, wait, but well, that was 10 years ago, right?
I know, I truly don't know when The Crown aired, which is very strange. It's a weird feeling.
And so much has happened with the royals since, isn't there? There must be royal fatigue, right? Like...
Well, at the end of this week, we will be publishing our predictions for all of these categories, so we'll be a little bit more decisive than we can be here, and try to sort through how many nominees there will be in each category, which is impossible to figure out on a regular basis. And then, again, on Wednesday, July 12th, we will have an episode as soon as we can after the nominations come out to talk about what it all means and, you know, maybe get crazy and predict the winners because we usually can't help ourselves. So stay tuned for that. And then before we go, Richard, your review of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, I got that right,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is up now. I haven't seen it yet, but in your review, you made it sound like that the incredible efforts towards spectacle that they made during the pandemic pretty much paid off.
Yeah, I mean, the effort is evident in the title. There's a semicolon, an M, or a full colon, an M dash, and a number. I mean, that's rare. Yes, it does pay off. I mean, I think that there are two things to say about that. One is that as effective as they were as marketing, the videos of Cruise doing the big cliff jump on the motorcycle into a base jump stunt, it does kind of dampen the impact when you actually see it because you've already seen it. I think that's a tough kind of catch 22, you know, kind of thing where it's like, I'm glad we saw it, but also I wish we hadn't. But also the first half of this movie, which is pretty long, it's just shy of 3 hours. It's really struggling to get its gears turning, and I watched, you know, the first hour, let's say, a little bit worried because I loved the past movie Fallout, the last one, so much. But then it gets there, you know, and everything from the motorcycle jump onward is incredibly exciting. And there's a great sort of nighttime street chase through Venice earlier than that in the film that's really well done. Christopher McQuarrie, who directed the film, as he has the past couple, he is doing a different tack stylistically than Fallout, which was very Nolan-esque in its sort of pomp and grandeur. And this is more returning to the De Palma style from the original Mission Impossible film in a kind of, you know, skewed camera angles, kind of moody, melodrama-y kind of feel to it, which I think works when it works and then kind of doesn't when it doesn't. And that's, it's a little bit unsteadier, let's say, than the past couple installments have been. So box office wise, I mean, this is one of the huge hopes for the summer, and we're running out of them now that we're in July. I worry a little bit that it's just not going to connect in the way that it needs to, given how much it reportedly cost, which is in, I think, over $300 million.
Yeah, but you didn't have to pay for it, so who cares?
Well, no, I did. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. They were like, you like Fallout so much, pay us for the next one.
I think we need to talk about your financial choices.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm letting myself feel kind of optimistic that maybe Mission Impossible, Barbie, and Oppenheimer will work, and July will be really good. Am I setting myself up for disappointment, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
I'm optimistic with you. I'm feeling really good about it. I can see the headlines now about how the box office is back.
After all of June being like, it's over. No right. One's going movies anymore.
I mean, I'm sure we will spend plenty of time the next couple weeks talking about Boppenheimer, as I'm choosing to call it. I know that's not the preferred portmanteau, but...
It's much better. It's much better.
I do think that if we have to kind of pick one horse to win... Or actually, let's say one horse to lose. I think Oppenheimer might have a little more trouble than it's sort of the fervor surrounding it suggests. You know?
A three-hour movie about World War II and the atomic bomb and like the regret is right. Not a great summer sell?
With a famous name in the title, but like not that famous, you know?
Yeah,
not as famous as Barbie.
All respect certainly to you, Robert Oppenheimer.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, the whole joke of them coming out in the same day is that they seem to serve very different audiences. I would say everyone on this podcast are served by both films, but
absolutely.
I think that Mission Impossible hopefully will pave a good runway for those two films, and all three can help revive or prop up a sagging summer season. But I don't know. I mean, I think Mission Impossible is so reliant, I think, on international money, which has been unsteady in China and elsewhere since the pandemic. And so I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'll be there for all three. I'm not going to triple feature them because I think that would wear out anybody. Yeah. But yes, I think we'll have a lot to get into as July goes onward. That does it for today's show. We'll be back next week to talk about the Emmy nominations. In the meantime, find us at Vanity Fair on Twitter and Instagram at VF Awards Insider and on our own. I am at Katie Rich and Richard.
Mariah Laws.
And Rebecca.
Rebecca M. Ford.
Our editor and producer is Brett Fuchs, and this week's award for the best reason to break ancient Little Gold Men law and record an episode without David Canfield goes to Rebecca Ford.
That rule is so, like, old by now and not followed.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Oh. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
From PRX.